This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. And the Allerton Music Barn Festival in Allerton Park in Monticello, sponsored by the University of Illinois School of Music, has been a subject of aspects of this show for the last week or so, and will continue to be the next couple of days. On the show today, we have three performers representing the two final concerts at the Allerton Music Barn Festival. One of them is called the West Coast Sound, referring to jazz, and the final one, then, the Great American Songbook, all of them featuring members of the University of Illinois School of Music jazz faculty. We have two members of the faculty and one doctoral student in that jazz program on the show to perform with us today and to perform for us today and to talk a bit about West Coast Sound and some of the songbook. Glenn Wilson is baritone sax player. Jim Pugh's been on the show before, renowned trombonist. And Chris Nolte is a bass player, doctoral student in the program, has been on the show actually a couple of times with two other groups. They're all joining us today on Live and Local, live from our studio on FM 90.9. Thank you. tune called Delia. The tune is by Mark Copeland, performed by Glenn Wilson. A disc called Blue Porpoise Avenue. Did I get that right? Mm-hmm. Glenn Wilson, the Barry sax player, with the bassist Jay Anderson, Mark Copeland, the pianist, Jeff Hirschfield on drums, Rory Stewart on the guitar. And Glenn Wilson is among our guests on Live and Local today. He is here with trombonist Jim Pugh, who's been on the show before. Also on the show before, Chris Nolte, bass player. Jim and Glenn both on faculty at the University of Illinois School of Music in the Jazz Division. And Chris is a doctoral student in that division and representing it very well, I have to say. So far, I just told him a bit ago, I think that he is the most performed player so far on Live and Local, having appeared with two different groups. He made his debut on Live and Local with a bunch of high school players from the ISYM camps at the University of Illinois. Their bassist was sick, so he filled in admirably. And he is not in high school.
No.
He would have been otherwise extremely prodigious to have be working on a doctorate while still in high school. So it wouldn't have been a bad claim to make, I guess.
No,
if
I guess
it
I should have stuck to that.
Yeah.
That's the story, yeah.
Grow some more hair, though, to be more credible. And also was with us just a couple of weeks ago, I think it was, with the Chris Raymond trio, of which he is indeed a member. And Glenn Wilson is a lecturer in the jazz division here. He has quite a nice professional profile. He's played with Buddy Rich, Lionel Hampton, Tito Puente, the Bill Kirchner Nonet, Mel Lewis, Toshiko Akiyoshi, the Bob Belden Ensemble, Bruce Hornsby, many others, 30 years as a professional jazz saxophonist.
And I'm only 35.
Yeah, and you've got more hair than any of the rest of us. Well, except maybe Jim here.
I'm not 35. 36.
And Jim, according to his Wikipedia entry, was the lead trombonist some years ago with Woody Herman's Thundering Herd, played with Chick Corea's Return to Forever Band. He's been playing with Steely Dan for quite a while, Graham Ashton Brass Ensemble. That's one that we haven't talked about on this show before. And, of course, on faculty here at the University of Illinois. Jim and Glenn play together in the group trombone and baritone called, logically enough, Trombari.
Mm-hmm.
We have, so we're glad to actually finally have you play together here.
Which
we're looking forward to. Anyway, all these guys are on the show today. They will do some playing for us, but they're here for a particular reason, and that is that on Monday, Labor Day, they will, in two performances, be kind of closing out the Allerton Music Barn Festival. At 10 in the morning, it's a program called The West Coast Sound in Jazz. And in the evening at 8:30, a program called The Great American Songbook, which we talked about a week or so ago. Jeffrey McGee, also in the University of Illinois School of Music faculty, is giving the pre-concert talk and demonstration at 6:30. And members of the jazz faculty, with some guest singers, performing on that program in the evening. So thank you all for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Nice to be here.
Who wants to give an introduction to the West Coast Sound?
Well, I guess I will. I'll start.
This is Glenn Wilson.
This is Glenn. We're going to be doing the charts of the Dave Pell Octet, which is kind of an obscure group from the 50s. They were very popular at the time, and it's an octet, so the faculty will all be performing his charts. And Dave Pell was kind of a crazy guy. He was worked at several record labels, started several record labels. He was a producer, an arranger. He did film scoring out in L.A. But I think one of his first loves, and still, is his octet. He's still alive, and I'm not sure if the octet is still active on the West Coast or not, but I know that he publishes and sells all the arrangements that were done at that time, and it's some great stuff, and sort of in the birth of the cool type mode. He started the group in 1955 at the height of the cool, era, so to speak, and it was on the West Coast, so it made a lot of sense. I don't think those charts have been performed anywhere around here. ever. So they're kind of obscure and hard to get. So we're looking forward to that. We haven't actually practiced them yet. We're going to do that on Sunday. So I can't tell you much about, other than hearing the recordings, about the, playing the music, but we're looking forward to that. And then Jim and I will be doing a couple of the Mulligan Brookmeyer, Jerry Mulligan, Bob Brookmeyer things from the same year or same era, certainly, on the concert too, the stuff that we do with Tromberry. So that's what we'll be playing a little bit of today. And that should be a very interesting concert. It's very accessible music for people who aren't necessarily jazz fans, and that was the whole point of it then, and it's still true today, I think.
Birth of the Cool, am I remembering right, that is the name of a Miles Davis CD?
Yeah, it was the name that was put on later, much later after the music was recorded. You know, yeah. It was recorded in 49, and I think 56 the record came out, or 55. So.
But he was on the East Coast side of things.
Right, right.
Talk a little bit about Birth of the Cool. I mean, not necessarily the album, but what is cool jazz? What was cool jazz? And then what's East, what's West? What distinguishes the two?
Well, I mean, probably in the simplest terms, it's it came to be actually almost a more lyrical, more less in-your-face kind of style. A lot of the playing, if you listen, like the people that were the sort of the at the front of that, particularly when we're talking about the West Coast stuff, if you look at like Jerry Mulligan, or you mentioned Bob Brookmeyer, Chet Baker, those kind of people, their playing styles are pretty intimate. It's warmer. It's not trying for some of the like sort of splashier like pyrotechnics. It's a much more lyrical approach to playing. So a lot of the drums used in this, it's very rare. Actually, even with the Mulligan Brookmeyer, Mulligan Baker groups, it's like most of the drum work was with brushes rather than sticks. So the whole thing is like the level got dropped, the volume level got dropped quite a bit, and some of that in your face kind of intensity got pulled away from it. A lot of the Birth of the Cool stuff, because of those Gil Evans charts, there's a whole lot of stuff that's coming out of like almost more classical orchestration, in the way he's approaching like the ensemble around the soloist. So there's things that, like I said, the change from sort of the stock, what I guess before that would have been really big band, really just big band in your face dance music, as opposed to more intimate, almost concert music.
Where does bebop fit into that? Because I think of that, I guess. I am not up on jazz history very well, but there's the hard bop, which I think of as more of a kind of an in-your-face kind of thing. But where does bebop fit into this?
Well, this was actually sort of, I'm sorry. At the time, this was considered almost a white bebop. You know, it was kind of controversial, but most of the cool musicians were white, and the bebop musicians were black, and so it set up at the time a bit of a barrier there as far as one group and the other group.
And we have to clarify that, and you did not mean that the white musicians were cool and the black musicians weren't.
Well, that the music that became called cool,
yeah, right.
Yeah, was predominantly white musicians, and
right.
I think it was just a coincidence, really, and plus the fact that a lot of them were out in L.A. and they're. The migration sort of was happening at that time, but there weren't a lot of African-American jazz musicians out in L.A. at that time. It was mostly centered around New York. So, but the way Jim described it is perfect as far as the sound of the music and the interaction between the musicians. It was very popular. It was in movies at that time. You know, bebop, again, was more frenetic, and hard bop, which you talked about, was even more soul kind of based. It was very African-American based. As opposed to, that was more of a reaction to cool, I think, in historical terms. It was a little bit later than the cool period, hard bop, yeah.
So it's in this context, cool versus hot.
Yeah,
I
you
suppose.
Could say that. Yeah,
not cool versus not.
I mean, all these terms were put on years later.
Sure.
And you know, if as far as musicians are concerned, they don't mean much to us.
Right, the time they were playing music they liked to play.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and creative music.
Yeah. They gravitated, you know, Mulligan and those. Gravitated towards a more, well, I guess a softer, almost more lyrical approach, less less up and down, less vertical interaction, I think, more linear.
What do you mean by the vertical?
Well, vertical, like running up and down arpeggios and that kind of stuff. Like a lot of the bebop language is very much outlining chords and using that. And I think a lot of this, if you get to Bob Brookmeyer and Chet Baker and stuff, you'll find that their lines are much more scale-based and usually a little bit slower. Not that they couldn't play fast as well, but use those less urgency to be playing a whole lot of notes right out of the gate.
Would it be a ridiculous question for me to ask you to pick up your trombone and play us a vertical lick versus a linear lick?
You can't get to it.
It's a bass player in my way.
He's going to try it.
Yeah.
And it looks like.
Right. Actually, something might actually be more definitively shown on saxophone.
Though. Well, you got it now. You're on there. But it actually became more popular with the general public because of that lyricism and melodicism. It became much more accessible to the general public, and that's why Chet Baker and Jerry Mulligan, and they were huge stars in the 50s.
Yeah. So something that's a little bit more of an episode. I mean, I pulled back a little bit also on the volume and stuff, but that's a little bit of the idea.
Okay, good. Well, I imagine that might be helpful. What do we have to do together first?
We could start with Line for Lions, I guess.
Sure.
Yeah, which is a Mulligan-Brookmeyer chart. Written for Jimmy Lyons.
And actually, you know, we heard part of that tune when Carl Kramer, who's director of the School of Music, was on here. It was an all Barry Sax arrangement.
Oh,
I think
really?
It was a Barry Sax quintet or something like that.
Oh, wow.
Playing a bunch of Jerry Mulligan tunes. I've got it in our studio.
There's a trio, a Jerry Mulligan a baritone band that played, three baritone band. I've worked with that.
So this will be fun to hear this now with Barry Sax. Trombone
and bass.
Bass.
We're missing our drummer, but other
you
than
can
that would be the
imagine
instrumentation.
That people can tap their toes.
Yeah, go like this.
There you go.
You'd be playing softly, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this group doesn't have a name on its own, although two of the three of you are trombari.
Well, all three of us are. Chris plays.
Oh, Chris is also
too.
In it. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't realize
that. Yeah.
Chris is in everyone.
Great. Chris is everywhere. Well, either way, you're listening to Live and Local. On FM 90.9, I'm Kevin Kelly, and a bit of a focus at the moment on the West Coast sound in jazz in anticipation of these folks and a bunch of others performing at the Allerton Music Barn at Allerton Park in Monticello next Monday morning, Labor Day, 10 o'clock in the morning. Glenn Wilson, Barry Sax, Jim Pugh, trombone, and Chris Nolte, bass. They are three-fourths, I guess, of Trumbarry. Three-fifths. So I'll get this right at some point.
Okay.
I'll let somebody get situated at the other microphones here to answer this question. You're listening live and local on FM 90.9. Glenn, the name of that tune was?
Line for Lions.
Oh, right, by Jerry Mulligan. And the other members, the regular members of Trumbarry are?
Yeah, Jim and I and Chris, the three of us. Joel Spencer is our drummer, and Chip Stevens, also on the faculty at the school, is a pianist.
And Joel is also on faculty?
No, Joel is a Chicago drummer. He was the head of jazz studies at Northwestern until recently, and he's a freelance drummer in Chicago. Very busy drummer, one of the best in town.
And a U of I alum.
And a U of I alum, that's right.
Well, speaking of which, you actually led straight to a question I wanted to ask you, Jim, because we've talked Glenn. We have talked with Jim on the show before and a bit to Chris about the University of Illinois Jazz Studies program, which has developed quite strongly in the last several years since Director Carl Kramer got to town. And I see in your own CV, Glenn, that you have a Master of Music in Jazz Performance from the University of Illinois in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
It was only 3 years ago.
Right.
And looking at your resume, you know, 30 years playing professional jazz sax, I would have thought that in 2006 you should have been teaching these people.
Well,
what made you decide to come?
It was funny. I never wanted to really teach, to tell you the truth. I taught private students throughout the years, but I really didn't have any interest in academia. I wanted to play, and I did other things too besides music that supported me, my music or my jazz habit, if you will. But my jazz band mentor from college, Tony Leonardi, passed away 3 months short of his retirement, and just unexpectedly. And he was a big influence in my life, jazz-wise. And then shortly after that, my father passed away, and I really started feeling mortal, if you will, and I started thinking that I got to pass, to give some of this back and really pass it on. And I started really feeling like I wanted to teach at the university level, and I didn't have a master's degree at the time. When I went to school, and up until, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 years ago, a bachelor degree with commensurate experience, as they call it, would get you into college. Now you pretty much need a DMA, you know, but a master's with commensurate experience would work for me, I think. So, yeah, so I came back, I talked to Chip, and I came back to school and got my degree here. So it's kind of interesting, the classes that I'm teaching now, I took about 4 or 5 years ago. And so that's been great for me because I'm able to see how the program works and what we're looking for out of our students and teachers. And so it's been a great experience for me to come back to school at the age of 50, and I was older than any of my instructors, and to be able to write and arrange and compose and do playing in the big band and all the stuff that I wanted to do anyway, but to get a degree at the end of it was great. And I had no promise of what I was going to do with it, but then it turned out that Chip was able to hire me. So,
and that's Chip McNeil, who's Chip McNeil, head of the Jazz Studies program.
Yeah.
At the University of Illinois.
Chris, yeah, I recommend it to anyone. Go back to school whenever you can.
Well, from what I hear, you know, in the present economy, a lot of people are choosing to do that. They don't have work, so they say, hey, I'll go to school and spend a bunch of money on myself and hope I get a job at some point and can pay all these loans back.
Right.
And so on. Speaking of somebody who's probably going to be heavily in debt, if you're not already, Chris Nolte.
I can't wait.
Chris is in the doctoral program here, fine bass player. Talk about what these guys teach you. I mean, how do, for example, this idea of the West Coast sound that you all will be demonstrating live at Allerton Park on Labor Day, how do they get that across to you?
In a lot of different ways. I mean, the majority of jazz education in my mind is listening. And checking out records, you know, a lot of times if we're doing things like this, then I'll listen to some of the original recordings of what they're doing. And there's books. I mean, I take history classes or jazz listening, what to listen to. But I've just found, I mean, and I'm sure these guys will tell you the same thing. It's like the majority of what you learn is on the bandstand, or in this case, in the radio station.
So we have an educational role here.
I think so, and I feel like I'm always learning when I'm playing with these guys. I'm always learning something about what to play, and you know, whether it's in the classroom or whether it's on the bandstand, it's a really great experience.
So, with the West Coast sound, you might go into class, and they will say the West Coast sound came out of these people, and these are the people who were involved in it. Now go listen to some records, and then you'll really know what we're talking about.
Yeah, and I think that really helps. And I mean, I know one thing that I was thinking when they were talking about the West Coast compared to the East Coast is that, and I've had many discussions about this with friends, is that they weren't necessarily diametrically opposed in any way. And a lot of times you had musicians who were thought of as, you know, West Coast musicians that were living in New York, and East Coast musicians that were living in L.A.
Connecticut.
Exactly. So Stan Getz is a name that a lot of times comes up in both camps, and you think, well, which one is he? It's like, well, you know, he just played jazz, and of course, I'm sure he wasn't thinking about what style of music am I playing. He's just playing what he wanted to play.
Well, it's like Glenn said earlier, these terms all got applied later doesn't mean that somebody said, well, I play the West Coast sound, so I better stay living out here and can only perform out here and can only play with people who live out here playing this kind of music.
Can only play it in a hot tub.
No, on a beach.
Yeah. Right.
And Chris actually took my music business class a couple years ago, so his career has really taken off since then.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, that is actually a good question that you raise, is the whole idea of the music business, because Glenn, you, Jim, are steeped in the music business. I mean, not just jazz, Jim, we're going to run down some of the places where you guys are playing, have played, or about to play, and you've been playing with Steely Dan, not a jazz group, although influences clearly.
Certainly elements of, yeah.
But yeah. You've got to have plenty to teach these guys about how to conduct yourself and try to make a living in the world of music, not just the world of jazz. Mm-hmm. Where do you start?
Well, you start with your own experience, I think, and both of us have played so long that we've been able to see a historical arc in the music, at least to bringing it up to the present. So we can see kind of where the music was and where it is now. We can't really, of course, predict where it's going, but the whole music business with, you know, record labels is really changing constantly. They're going out of business. Digital distribution and digital online marketing has sort of taken the place of a lot of what the record labels used to do. Anybody can make a CD now and does. So there's 30,000 CDs released every year in the United States alone, and you know, 0.1% sell 1,000 copies. So it's, you know, we do it because we love the music and we want to play and we want to try to advance the art form as we can. We look at it as an art form, not a commercial endeavor, you know, whereas most popular music, of course, is exactly the opposite.
Jim, anything to add to the whole business of music?
Well, the business, how to teach it. I guess with my students, actually, it's funny. After you get past teaching sort of the basics and the fundamentals of, you know, instrumental ability and all that kind of stuff, it's funny. It's like each student will take things off a different direction. I mean, actually, before I came here, had a lesson with one of my students, and we were basically talking about different kinds of monitoring systems, like either in-ear monitors or speaker monitors, and because he had encountered a situation this summer, was the first time he'd worked with what's known as a click track, which is basically hearing a metronome in a set of headphones that you have to play to. And the first time you encounter it, it's a unique experience. So here's like some sort of practical real-world music, in a way, music business stuff that might not get covered, or somebody that, you know, somebody else that maybe hadn't spent as much time out among them English, out playing in studios and doing a lot of live performance and stuff, might not have encountered some of this stuff. So we had a very interesting discussion about the difference of using in-ear monitors as opposed to headphones, as opposed to monitor speakers, as opposed to nothing at all.
And one of the things we try to teach, I'm sorry, is that like Jim said, the business of music is not what scales and what chords and what notes to play. It's showing up on time, being prepared, being able to read. So if you go in a studio and they put a piece in front of you, let's record, boom, turn it on, you have to sight read it. We've done that, you know, and our students are mortified when they think about having to do that, but that's the real business.
Yeah, Chris raises his hand and says, yes, I am mortified.
I try not to be, but...
But you do it well.
I try. I'm always trying.
We're talking with Jim Pugh, trombonist, Glenn Wilson, Barry sax player, both on faculty at the University of Illinois in the jazz program. Chris Nolte is bass player, studying in the jazz program. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. You can hear them along with other faculty members performing on Monday, Labor Day, twice at 10 o'clock. At the Allerton, both times at the Allerton Music Barn Festival, but 10 o'clock in the morning, program called The West Coast Sound, and in the evening at 8:30, a program called The Great American Songbook with some guest singers.
Mm-hmm. And we should probably mention that all the music for that Great American Songbook concert is being arranged by faculty members.
Especially for this
concert. So they'll all
That's
be world
fantastic.
Premieres.
That's true.
Never to be done again, maybe, but I don't know.
Well, anytime you take that ensemble. Well, that's the thing about so much of jazz is the ensemble varies depending on who shows up. Even if you plan a recording session, somebody might decide to bring in his buddy, and all of a sudden the personnel just changed and the dynamic just changed even before anything got started.
That's Could. Possible. Mm-hmm.
Probably less likely on a recording session, but certainly in live context, that happens plenty of times.
I mean, it seems to me I've read about things where somebody showed up for a gig and they ended up on the record.
Well, that's true, too, yeah.
Or Dizzy Gillespie ends up playing piano instead of trumpet.
If the pianist doesn't show up.
Yeah, or if they don't like the pianist or whatever.
Oh, well,
that's how I got with Bruce Hornsby. Well, I showed up to be a member of a six- or eight-piece horn section, and Bruce hated the horn arrangements that the guy wrote. So we cut it down to four, and we wrote the arrangements in the studio. And then on his touring band, he cut it down to two of us. So it was like, it was just serendipitous that we happened to hook up that way. So
he obviously liked what you were doing at that point.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, you ended up with him. This is Live and Local, where our programs today are made possible in part with support from Parkland Art Gallery at Parkland College. The gallery's exhibitions and educational programs are offered free of charge to the public. Artist receptions, interviews with artists, and other special programs are offered to interpret the exhibits. And one of the reasons that Parkland is on board with Live and Local is to sponsor our calendar. And here are some things that are on it. As long as we're talking about jazz, and we have Chris Nolte with us, Chris is a member of Mark O'Connor's quintet performing at the Iron Post tonight in Urbana, downtown Urbana, at 7 o'clock. He will be joining a different group, Kenny Drew Jr., also at the Iron Post tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Basis for both those. Iron Post in Urbana has a lot of jazz. So,
yes. I'll be there September 18th with Jeff Helgeson.
Jeff Helgeson. Don't bother to check out their website unless you want to know where it is.
Go to MySpace. They're on MySpace. That's where they keep their schedule now.
Yeah, I found this out because the last thing they list, I think, was in April.
April, yeah.
But there's lots.
That was us.
Lots and lots going on.
Well, there's another website.
Yeah. There you go.
We also have a concert, well, a session, a weekly session of Irish traditional music in downtown Champaign. That's every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. at Bentley's Pub. Tomorrow, the Allerton Music Barn Festival opens in Monticello with a tango opera. It's by Astor Piazzolla called Maria de Buenos Aires. That is starts at 8:30. It's preceded by some tango lessons and a demo. That's at 6:30 tomorrow night. And then on Friday at the Allerton Music Barn Festival is the American Brass Band Journal, which I'm at. Jim, are you playing on that program?
I'm actually not involved in that because I'm going to be up in Chicago at the Chicago Theater that night. But
with Steely Dan.
With Steely Dan, yes. But that should be a very interesting concert because they're playing on period instruments.
The brass band,
I was actually very sorry not to be able to participate in that because they've got a collection here of these like turn of the last century instruments that were it was going to have to go and actually spend time learning to play these because they're very different mouthpiece shapes and very different like bore sizes than the what modern instruments are. So it's
we had a quintet of them on the show last week.
Okay.
I think about a week ago. So yeah, we found out how fickle some of them can be too.
They certainly can
in trying to perform. Let me mention just two other concerts tomorrow. The Illinois Woodwind Quartet from the University of Illinois and some guests performing at the Mills Breast Cancer Institute on Carl Clinic Campus, University Avenue. That's a free program at noon tomorrow. And Dudley Owens and his band, another jazz group, performing at Luna Cafe tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Oh, and here's one more, also jazz group called Eponymous. Do you know these guys? They're all nodding their heads. At Zorba's in Champaign tomorrow night at 9:30.
I'm in that band as well.
Of course.
Oh, Chris says, oh, yeah, I'm playing that gig.
Support Zorba's on Thursday night for jazz and the Iron Post regularly for jazz. Yeah. Please.
Well, let's get you guys back on your feet and do the next tune. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. Glenn Wilson, Barry Sachs, Jim Pugh trombone, Chris Nolte on bass. And what is next, gentlemen?
I'll do a tune, a Bob Brookmeyer tune, again from the Mulligan Brookmeyer quartet, tune of Bob's called Open Country.
Which will be on the concert Monday.
Yes. Thank you.
Cool.
See? Cool.
Yeah, exactly. A Bob Brookmeyer tune called
Open Country.
Open Country, played here live in Studio F on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Glenn Wilson, Barry Sachs, Jim Pugh, trombone, Chris Nolte, bass. Our broadcast today is made possible with support from Owen's Funeral Home, located at the corner of Elm and University in the historic Trevitt Mansion, across from Westside Park in downtown Champaign. Owen's Funeral Home, owned and operated by the Owens family since 1925, invites you to join them in supporting public radio. On Live and Local tomorrow, rather different program, we're going to focus on another of the Allerton Music Barn concerts, which is Saturday night at 8:30. It's a program of Czech chamber music. And on on the show will be pianist Rochelle Sennett performing in one of those pieces, violinist Stefan Milenkovic, both of those on the faculty at the University of Illinois. Bruno Nettle is emeritus faculty in musicology, specifically ethnomusicology, well, and other areas of musicology and anthropology. He will be giving the pre-concert talk about Czech music and more, and he'll join us on the program also tomorrow. And it'll be our first chance to have Bruno, I'm sure the first time of many, because he's got so many pies in which he has had his fingers and thumbs over his long, long, long career in teaching at the University of Illinois. Well, we'll probably end up, well, we'll have time for at least one more, if not two tunes on the show. I hope you have at least a couple more.
Oh, we have hundreds.
Yeah,
we're just not prepared to play any of them today.
Looking at the resumes for Jim and Glenn, I don't know much about any of these people, but I'm always been curious. Who among, I mean, I read off some of these before for you, Glenn, Buddy Rich, Lionel Hampton, Tito Puente, Bill Kirshner, Mel Lewis, Toshiko Akiyoshi, Bob Belden, Bruce Hornsby, any number of others. Who of these stands out as serious characters?
Oh, well, Buddy Rich for sure. He's number one character in one of the most characters in jazz history. So
I was going to ask you about him only because of all those. I used to hear about him regularly because my sister, when we were both in high school, was a drummer, and she was a huge fan of Buddy Rich, as I'm sure every high school jazz drummer was or is at one time or another. So what made him?
Well, he was just, at this point in his career, he had a band full of mostly young players, you know, and he was just, he had no patience for anybody, you know. He had a lot of eccentricities, you couldn't bring onions on the bus, and just things that people would find out the hard way by getting reamed out, you know, and he had a really, really quick temper, and he was very unpredictable, you know. He could be really a nice guy, and the next minute you do the same thing, and he flips out at you, so it was always a challenge. And, you know, we had to be, the last one on the bus was always yelled at for being late, even if you were 15 minutes before we were supposed to leave, you know. So Lionel Hampton was exactly the opposite, because he was so laid back, you know. We'd leave an hour late regularly, and the bus would just stop for pork chops whenever he felt like stopping the bus. So he was a character, too. At the time I played with him, he was pretty old, but he was still playing great, and just all night long he could play, you know. We did some three-hour sets with him.
So what did you do to tick off Buddy Rich?
Only one time I did. If somebody threw a beer can on the bus and it rolled around, we weren't allowed to have any beer. And so we didn't know how long that was going to last, so we'd have to open the beer under our pillows, etc. And it was in our rider at the time, so there was usually beer available. And one time we were in Canada, and I walked in the dressing room first, and they had this Molson Brador, which is a very high alcohol ale. I wasn't familiar with it at all. And so I'm looking at it, and I pop one open, I'm drinking it, and in walks Buddy, and he says, "Is that beer?" And I said, "No, it's some kind of high alcoholic ale. I forgot we weren't supposed to be drinking beer." So he started screaming at me, and I had to run out of the room with the beer in my hand. You know. That was the only time I got yelled at directly. So.
Well, that sounds not too bad.
And yeah, it wasn't bad.
And you were in his band how long?
A little over a year.
But so yeah, yeah. That seems like pretty good.
But we were, yeah.
After being on the road, how many days of that year?
Oh, most of the year. We had a few weeks off. That was it. Yeah.
And tell me about Toshiko Akiyoshi.
She had a very interesting book. Her husband Lou Tabakin was the tenor player and featured player, and so Toshiko's music was very intricate. I had bass clarinet and alto flute, and there was all kinds of doubles and things. Really hard music, and we toured Europe a few times, and she was very popular over there. And
I know she played a number of times at the Ravinia Festival in North Chicago, and I used to work there, and I just thought it seemed like an incredibly virtuosic band with a little different sound than other people's.
Yeah, well, because it was mostly her arrangements, and she had a very distinct arranging style, and for the saxophone, it was different than any other book I've ever played as far as where the voicings were for the various saxophones. It was a challenge.
And you said you had to do a number of doubles on that. How prerequisite is it for somebody playing sax who wants to make it in the jazz business to cover all the saxes?
You don't have to cover all the saxes. It's more important to cover the doubles that are on your particular instrument. For example, baritone sax, you have to play bass clarinet, and you might have to play clarinet. If you're playing lead alto or alto sax, you have to play soprano and flute, and there's just certain instruments that are expected to be on that particular chair. So, I play alto and tenor and soprano, but my alto and my tenor basically stay in the closet. I use my soprano on gigs sometimes with the baritone, but if you can play one sax, you can play them all. It's just a matter of how good you are on any particular one and how you want to specialize, probably.
Sure. So if we have any high school kids listening to this, which they better not be because they're supposed to be in school. And they play sax and it's just alto and they think they're going to be a working musician doing that only, they better come to the University of Illinois and discover otherwise,
yeah,
right?
That's right. And this year, for the first time, we have 6 baritone players that are specifically baritone players that showed up. So
they've all come to work with you.
I hope so. I would like to think that. But
yeah, well, it could be true. Okay, it's 12:54. We've got 6 minutes left on the show. That gives us time for a tune. What are we going to wrap up with?
A tune. Well, we could do Opus 23D. Do we dare? This is an Anthony Braxton tune that we do with Tron Barry. It's kind of a free tune, but we'll do a shortened version of it. We stretch it out a lot when we play it.
Well, and if you stretch it out, we'll just fade out on you and go on into the news. That'll work too.
We're used to that. Time marches on.
Well, it happens on recordings, Glenn Wilson's our Barry sax player. Jim Pugh, trombone. Chris Nolte is the bass. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. Okay, so that was the 4-minute version or 5-minute version of Opus 23D by, I just forgot the
Anthony
name.
Anthony Braxton.
Anthony Braxton, performed on Live and Local here by 3/5 of the group called Trumbarry. The trom part, trombonist Jim Pugh, the Barry part is baritone sax player Glenn Wilson. And the part that doesn't get mentioned in the name, you should protest on this, Chris, is the bass player Chris Nolte.
And I'm livid, by the way. Yeah.
You're what?
I'm livid.
You're livid, yeah. You just look like a real livid kind of guy. And now Chris just walks in here, his hands in his pockets, nice and laid back all the time. And you have to be. You know, I would think to be a jazz player, to be able to adapt constantly from one group. We already talked, like, you're in 4 of the groups performing this week, Chris, at the Iron Post or otherwhere locally, and that you've got to be pretty calm kinds of people, I would think.
I try.
And they all just standing there, breathing calmly and
versatile,
producing no reaction.
We're not calm, but we are versatile.
Yeah, there you go. Well, it's been a blast to have you guys on the show today. It's been very cool to have you on the show today.
Thank you.
As we talk about and have some demonstrations of some cool West Coast jazz. You can hear a wonderful full morning's demonstration of the West Coast sound and jazz Monday morning at 10 o'clock at the Allerton Music Barn at Allerton Park in Monticello. And most of the jazz faculty, University of Illinois, will bring themselves back in the evening at 8:30 for a wonderful sounding program that I will be attending and actually hosting called The Great American Songbook. There are pre-concert talks as well. Check out the website, allertonmusicbarn.com. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly.